All right, welcome to episode 36, the Bobbycast. Here, this episode with Walker Hayes. Hey, boy.
Hey, buddy.
So, I guess now we spend a lot of time together because we're on the road right now together. And so, now I get to ask the questions that I don't get to ask, like, when we're just sitting down. Because the people want to know, like, the real stuff. And so, there'll be stuff, like, some of the stuff I wouldn't ask you.
Yeah.
Like we're just hanging out before a show.
Right.
We'll be like, tell me your deepest fear.
Yeah, you don't ask me stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't know. We just talk. But we're always, like, getting ready for stuff.
Right.
Too. Because you always got to go on and play. So here's the whole, what we'll do is we'll kind of encapsulate you and then we'll just work back.
Okay.
So right now, you just signed a record deal to Monument Records.
Right.
What does that mean?
My goodness. I mean, it means I have another chance at having a career, you know, as an artist and that being my full-time job. I mean, that's what it means to me. Might sound simple, but that's exactly what it means. It means I have a career, a chance at a career, a long-lasting career.
Again?
Yes, again. Another shot, for sure.
So you talk about other shots, and just quickly here, because then I want to go all the way back through it. But
yeah,
you've been on labels before?
Yeah, this is my third record deal. I've been in Nashville 12 years, and I was signed to Mercury, got dropped. I was signed to Capitol. Got dropped, and you know, didn't think I was gonna get another chance because you don't really get that many here. Most people don't get two, and so this is my third.
The thing about Walker too is that we didn't know each other, and we first moved here. It was when my co-host Amy's mom was sick, and I got this song. I said, "Hey, this guy named Walker Hayes wrote this song called Joy Like Judy," and so. And I heard the song. So we be choosing to use it to make a beautiful noise. And Amy's mom was fighting cancer, and we were doing a fundraiser. And it wasn't even for her mom, it was just we were, you know, doing a Pimp and Joy thing. That's how we met. And so you came, and the song actually was downloaded a bunch of times, you know, that kind of thing happened. And then I didn't see it for a bit. I don't see anybody, first of all.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it for a bit. And then I'm on YouTube. And I do the thing on YouTube where I find an artist and it'll go also recommended. Mm-hmm. Also recommended. Also recommended. And so that's how I find music and artists. And I'll go to SoundCloud and I'll do whatever. And I'm going through and I see this song right here. And where my shades at? And I was like, that's Walker Hayes. I was like, you know, that's the Joy Like Judy guy.
Yeah. Same shaker.
And I was like, I don't know what this is, but it sounds like nothing else. I remember thinking that. It's like, it sounds like nothing else. So I played it on the radio the next morning. And I was like, this. You just hear something that it strikes you oddly. And then from there, I just started to play all your stuff on the air. Because I'd sit there and I'd be like, oh, you think that's good? Yeah. You got to hear this one. Stars. I was like, my favorite song is The Comedian.
It's too bad.
There you go.
Being funny.
So all these songs, as I would hear them, I would be like, this is unlike anything I'm hearing right now, period. And I would talk to my friends, like Dan Smyer from Dan and Shay.
Yeah.
Him and I would talk about music a lot. And I was like, this Walker Hayes stuff is like next level, like cerebral type stuff. And I don't even think anybody even notices it right now. And he's like, well, you know, we talked about it. Then you ended up going on tour with them.
Yeah.
Now you're on tour with me. And it's like, that's where we are right now. So that's where we are. And that's what we're going to come back to.
Yeah.
But now I want to go back to the very beginning.
Okay.
So you talk about you came to Nashville. You came to Nashville. How old were you when you came to Nashville?
I was 23, 24.
You go to school and study music?
I went to college, and I did eventually change my major to piano. I graduated with a degree in music with an emphasis on piano.
You a good piano player?
No.
Are you a piano player?
Yeah, you sit down
at a piano, and people be like, oh, that guy can play piano.
I could, you know, I could play with the songs, my songs. You know, I could play for myself. I had to do a lot of classical stuff you know, obviously to graduate. But when I moved to Nashville,
are you sandbagging a little bit? Like a golfer would be like, I'm not that good. Then he goes
I mean, honestly, I didn't really play piano until college, and I met a professor, and I said, can I finish this on time? So I got pretty proficient, you know, while I was in college. It's a lot of muscle memory and a lot of cool stuff I learned, but now I could just chord around. Kind of like I'm as good at piano as I am at guitar.
So you knew the guitar then too, though, right? You played guitar then?
Yeah.
Were you musical through like elementary school, high school?
You're growing up, my wife and I, we actually met in a school play, you know, so I did that kind of stuff, school theater and sang in choirs and things like that. Music really, my dad was a music minister before he started selling real estate.
In Alabama?
Yeah. In Alabama. And so, yeah, I mean, he kind of gave me that music bug. I didn't really chase it as like a dream, you know, a job or anything like that. And definitely didn't even do that out of college. I went to kind of go work for him.
So when you finished school, you went to work for your dad, who was a real estate agent.
Yeah, so I finished school, got my real estate license, and I got engaged to Lainey. You know, we have been dating on and off for a bazillion years. And that was my plan. That was my answer to her dad. You know, what are you going to do? And it was work for my dad. And my dad encouraged me to go play at a bar. It's called the Mobile Yacht Club off of Dauphin Island Parkway in Mobile. And he kept encouraging me to do that. He thought it was funny, kind of how I would mimic people. I knew like a couple songs on the guitar and would play around at the house. And he wanted me to do it. And I didn't want to do it because I had stage fright. That scared me to death. You know, getting up in front of people and singing. And finally I said, Dad, I'll do this if you'll leave me alone, you know, about it and stop asking me to do it. And I went up there on a Friday night, sang some songs, and pretty much changed my mind about life.
So you and you performed. You were like, all right, this is what I want to do.
That's it. I mean, crazy whim, called Lainey, said, we're moving. Then I had to tell her parents.
Really?
And they weren't too excited.
I wouldn't be either.
Yeah, no, I get it. Either.
All right, two things. One, I'm gonna do a commercial real quick here because we're sponsored. Two, people are gonna get really irritated with you if you keep going. And as it goes, they're gonna go. Well, Walker, not stop going during the interview because I don't even notice I do stuff. All right, so let me talk about this first of all. Blue Apron. When you come to my house, you see a box. Blue Apron. What it is. Yeah, listen, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from. You eat clean.
Dude, I'm a health nut.
You just did it again.
Sorry.
It's tough to realize you do it. There you go. You got it. Like, Walker eats really clean, and for me, it's about that, too. There you go.
I sniff.
It's always noises. It's always noise. Blue Apron is affordable, too. Less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes, pre-portioned ingredients, and you can make the meals at home. Guaranteed to, and this lifesaver is there's a card and it tells you how to actually make the meals, which is great. And so, because me, I'm not that good at cook, so it helps me make things, and I eat clean. And you can check the menu out, see it all yourself. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping. Go to blueapron.com/bobbycast. You love Blue Apron because it comes right to your door, and you can fix your schedule, and you can pick your food. You love how good it feels and tastes, and you'll create these meals. blueapron.com/bobbycast. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook, and it's a better way to even trick your significant other into thinking you're a good cook. So there's that. Thank you, blueapron/bobbycast, blueapron.com. And so, okay. Do you cook, by the way?
No.
Because you have six kids?
No, I do not cook.
Six kids and
six
a wife.
Six kids, three boys, three girls, and a wife.
And you don't cook?
I don't cook. No, I cook. I mean, I cook an egg.
Yeah,
oh, cereal.
Can't cook an egg. All right, so you decide we're moving to Nashville. It's just from one night of playing in front of people.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, I played, had such a great time. I called Lainey, said I want to move to Nashville to sing. That was it. So I want to go.
And
sing.
Well, what's her reaction?
You know, I think she was pretty adventurous. You know, at the time we were kids, excited about you know getting out of town. She was with it. I mean, oddly enough, there was no second guessing on her part. She was ready to go.
And so what was your style back then?
So my style back then, I remember two songs that I played. One was Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, and then Dobie Gray.
Drift Away?
Yeah, Drift Away. I guess Drift Away. And I only played like 5 songs. I just played them over and over. And so, yeah, I mean, I was just going to come up and sing, you know, move to Nashville, try to be a rock star.
Do you think you're going to make it?
Yeah, I did. I was dumb enough to be like, yeah, I'm going to go, you know, and figure this out, be famous. I mean, I knew nobody. We had a great time picking out our apartment and stuff like that. Honestly, meeting with her parents, they were really frightened and just thought I was nuts. You know, this was on such a whim, and the security that I had, you know, in Mobile made a lot more sense to them. And so, yeah, I mean, man, we just found an apartment, got married, and drove up here.
So you move here, and what does one do when you don't know anybody in a town like Nashville and you want to make music? Like, what's the first step? You go outside and...
Man, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, the absolute first thing I did was go sign up for an open mic night at the Bluebird. I don't remember exactly what number I chose, you know, to get selected that night, but...
So you played the first night you went?
I came on a Monday night, stood in line, got selected. They were about to call my name, but I realized that everybody in there was playing songs that they had written, and I showed up to play covers, so we left. And then I came back the next Monday with a couple songs that I wrote that week and then performed, and it was the same rush, you know.
So the first time you went, you end up not playing.
Well, I chickened out because you don't play Dope. I wasn't about to get up and play that. I was going to play Drift Away.
Here's a little song, everybody. Give me the beat, boy, and free not slow. And then, what? Yeah. Did you write that? You feel like a little something I wrote? So first time you don't do it. Second time you go and you do it. What'd you play? What song? You remember?
I remember I played a song about as short of a time period as we had been married. I learned very quickly that when you bring up the in-laws, that your significant other gets really pissed. And so I wrote a song about that. And it was kind of a joke, you know, a funny song. And I don't remember the title of it. And I played 2. And I just remember the crowd reacting, you know.
How'd they react?
They laughed. They had a great time. I mean, they went nuts. It's a real supportive crowd. At the Bluebirds, they're there to hear the writer perform their song. So they went nuts. I mean, it was not. I didn't, like, get a deal or anything quick, you know. But
did you feel like after that night, though, that you had cemented a little more in your head, like, I can do this?
I didn't really think about whether I could or not. I just did, you know what I'm saying? And I also... It was like a drug. I mean, honestly, since then, I haven't stopped writing songs. It's just, I fell in love with that conceiving the idea, putting it together, playing it for somebody, getting their reaction, moving on to the next one. You know, my favorite song is always the one I'm working on right now. And that's kind of how I've been since then. It pretty much consumes my life. And has since then.
So how long until you get, and I'm assuming you're getting a publishing deal first, which is what happens, they pay you to write songs. How long did it take from you playing that Bluebird to you getting a publishing deal?
So I had a day job. I booked motivational speakers at Premier Speakers Bureau in Franklin.
Like, what motivational speakers ran through in Franklin?
A lot of right-wing conservatives, old Steelers player, Rocky Blyer, a couple authors, Oliver North.
Really?
One of their guys, yeah. Sean Hannity, we booked them. Some of those were exclusive. Trying to get rid of that tick. I booked them and lost my job in a year and then I got a pub deal. So it took me a year and a couple months to secure a pub deal.
So in that year, you're just writing and sending songs to people going, hey, check it out.
You know, in that year I was working, you know, that was 9 to 5. My clientele was West Coast event planners. So I got to show up a little bit later and stay a little longer, but I was writing songs while I was working, you know, on my computer, just loading it up. And yeah, I mean, playing open mic nights, anybody I could ever get my songs in front of. Obviously I was trying to do that. Playing all the local, you know, songwriter nights that I could. And, I wasn't really comparing myself to other people. I just loved writing. I mean, obsessed with writing.
So you write and you start to get paid to write. And what was your first cut?
Shoot, man. I mean, my first pub deal actually got me a record deal first. I mean, I didn't get a cut.
So your pub deal got you a record deal first. Well, is this the Keith Urban demo story?
No, that's Capital.
So that's the second deal.
The first pub deal I ever got was from a neighbor heard me messing around on the porch. He said, man, I really like what you do. I'm going to take you, introduce you to two or three people. He brought me into town. I met two big-time producers.
A neighbor where? In Franklin?
In Franklin.
Here's you playing on your porch.
Here's me on the porch. Yeah. He's like, dude, I really love your voice. Did you write that? I'm like, yeah, you want to hear some more? End up, I wrote a song about his kid, whose name is Hogan, which that was a business move right there. I was like, dude, if I write a song about his kid, it's going to really, you know, hook me up. So he takes me into town, introduces me to Scott Hendricks, David Malloy, and a guy named Christy DiNapoli. And Christy wanted to sign me to a pub deal. The other two wanted to maybe cut some sides and do the shoppy thingy. And I wasn't really ready for that. I just wanted to write, you know, really bad. I wanted to get paid to write songs. And at that time, I only had one kid, so I didn't have to make that much money. And so anyway, Christy signed me under a guy named Buddy Killen, who's gone now, but great first publisher to have. Learned a lot from that guy. And Allison Jones, I know this is industry, but signed me at Mercury.
And so you get a publishing deal and a record deal basically at the same time.
Well, I got a pub deal, and then we worked on it, you know, and he cut some sides there, and then they shot me and then got me my first record development deal.
So when you get signed to a development deal, what do they start doing with you? What do they develop?
So the development deal basically got me James Stroud, great producer, he cut some sides on me. So what we did is just accumulate songs, kept writing for a little while, chose the best ones, went in the studio, cut them with an excellent band. So that was my first experience with that, you know. And, of course, we came home with five songs. I thought I was going to be Garth Brooks.
Were you?
I sounded like him.
Yeah?
I sounded better than... No, I was not Garth Brooks. I had some great stuff. You know, looking back, I think some of those sides were good, but... there was a falling out within the company, and it wasn't long till I was off that label. I mean, that deal expired pretty quick.
So you're on, did you put a record out?
I didn't. I cut five sides, literally celebrated the cutting. My first,
yeah, you cut five songs.
We're beside myself, right. And this stuff sounds so great. We finished those in a December. I got a call in January saying that, James Stroud was gone from the label, and that he had parted with head people, and Allison Jones was leaving, and I wasn't on the label anymore.
But the label stayed.
Label stayed, yeah.
Never put out a single.
No, never put out a single.
Did you still have a publishing deal?
I did.
Okay, so you're still writing.
Still writing, and still trying to get outside cuts, but did not get outside cuts.
So you have to go to another, how long until you get signed to a different label?
So after that, it took me 2 years to get another label.
Now, is this when Urban hears your?
This is when Autumn House, a friend of mine, pitched a song for Keith Urban. Keith Urban did not take the song, but the A&R rep at Capitol, Autumn House, said, I like this guy singing. I like this writing style. You know, who is this kid? And they said it's Walker Hayes, you know. And within a couple months, I had a deal in Capitol. A lot of my deals came pretty quick. You know, deals are hard to get. But my first two just kind of fell into my lap. I mean, they just kind of came out of nowhere for me.
So you get a deal, you start to cut songs again, or do you use your old songs?
Oh, man, when I got a deal at Capitol, I was writing. You go through the producer search. You know, I was on Capitol 2 years. Probably before we even decided, you know, to try a single.
You had been signed for 2 years before you put a song out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd been at Capitol around that time.
Is it frustrating?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we were looking for the right producer. We tried some. We cut some. They just didn't blow our minds, you know.
So then you have your first song. What's your first single?
My first single is Pants.
All right.
She can wear the pants, but she can't run the show.
I like that look you're giving me, Bobby.
Did you write that?
I did. I wrote it for my wife.
watch, gives the orders, makes a plan. If that woman's wish.
When you hear this song now, what do you think?
I cringe.
Why?
I don't know, man. You know, I just hear it and it just doesn't sound, you know, it doesn't sound that great. I don't hear it like I did then. When I heard it then, I just thought, this is going to be amazing. And I don't know, I just hear it now and it just, maybe I've gotten better at writing, you know, and I can just see the holes in there. But yeah, I cringe. It's like hearing myself on a answering machine. Thanks, Bobby.
So how'd the single do? I have no idea.
The song was added heavily, you know, right off the bat. And, you know, I saw success coming my way quick. And then it just hit a wall. And some people were slow to pick it up, and it went to 38. And eventually, you know, Mike Dungan and Capitol pulled it, and they decided to go with another one shortly after that.
What song was after that one?
They went with a song called Why Wait for Summer, and it did not do as well as Pants.
If you have two singles that didn't work, did they drop you, or did they go, we're going to work on some other stuff?
So we chilled out for a long time. You know, I got put on the back burner, and I sat for a long, long time. And, man, honestly, just to give Capitol some credit, I mean, they believed. I mean, they believed hardcore, and they stuck their neck out for me. I didn't fully understand, you know, the need for the machine. I didn't know how the biz really worked, you know, at that time. You know, there was a little bit of arrogance. I'm not the most coachable human being on the planet, and that kind of, you know, shot me in the foot back then. But yeah, we sat for a long time. I continued to just write and write and try to give them that one, you know, that they felt confident. You know, if you're going to go three deep, that third one, I mean, that's your Hail Mary right there, you know, especially if the first two have flopped. So I fought and fought, you know, to write and to get that song, the one. And man, just couldn't find it. And, you know, eventually got dropped. And, yeah, I mean, that was the beginning of some dark times right there.
So you get dropped from your second label.
Yeah.
What year was that, you know?
Let's see, it's 2017, 16, 15, 14, probably 14, beginning of 14.
So you get dropped in 2014. So what do you do?
Well, at that period, I think I have four kids, so I'm still not, truly buried in financial woes. But I had a pub deal, you know. So my publishers, that's one thing that I've always had, is a pub deal. Publishers that believe that I can get outside cuts, you know. So at that time, I wouldn't say I just shut the artist thing down, but I wrote, man. I aimed. To get outside cuts, you know, I wanted outside country cuts. I wanted these mainstream artists to, you know, I just knew somebody was going to cut one of my songs. It would be huge, kind of solidify me a spot in that writer community. And I eventually did get a cut
from
Rodney Atkins. He cut one of my songs called "Touching Feet," and it was, you know, it was a great motivation, you know, to keep on writing. It didn't end up being a single, but hey.
What about this one? It was all
right with you. There it is. All I want, yeah, baby. Kind of forgot about that.
Sleep.
Love you, repeat. Hey!
Yeah.
That's Rodney Atkins too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Is. That was the one he cut on the next album.
And that was ended up being his single.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I killed his career. No, you didn't. Man, Rodney's a great guy, and he believed in some of my songs. And man, even though, you know, I had several of those types of songs that would get cut, and maybe they weren't the single, the big dog on the record. But when you get those, man, it just kind of tells you, it's like a whisper saying, hey, stick around. It's all right. You're here for a reason.
What about this here Cole Ford song, Dirty Side?
Dude. love this song. This is my jam.
Did you write it?
Yeah, I
and
wrote
you're
it
on
with
it.
Colt. Yeah, he featured me.
Ain't nothing better than a dirty song. Put your girls out there, put your hands so high. If you ain't scared to show your dirty side, I love a girl with a dirty side. Yeah, I got a girl with a dirty side. Get to my boys out there with me tonight. Looking for a country girl with a dirty side. I love a girl with a dirty side.
I didn't know you could dance like that.
Yeah, I got a girl with a dirty side.
So you and Colt wrote this?
We wrote it together, yeah. And I was super appreciative that they featured me.
I'm talking about the perfect girl, man. I'm going to tell you they everywhere. Stop looking at magazines, head on out.
Right, so you're writing. You're out. You don't have an artist deal.
Right.
Which you probably still want, even
yeah,
though you're
nah.
not, you still want to be the artist.
Right.
But you do. You want to be the writer. You talk about having dark times. Like, your mind just, like, where did it go?
I'll tell you what, the darkest period I ever experienced here in Nashville was past these cuts. You know, you get a couple cuts, and I'm barely supporting this. You know what I'm saying? The money's not just rolling in from these types of cuts. I'm not having hit singles, which is kind of what you got to have, you know, nowadays to thrive as a writer. You got to have one every now and then. I'm loving what I'm doing. I feel like I'm getting better and better and so much closer to dialing it in, you know, with what artists need and what they want and getting those outside cuts. But I'm playing at Puckett's Boathouse and money gets real tight. I'm talking seriously tight. And I don't really like to ask for help. And I had toyed with, you know, getting kind of a second gig. And I remember this night, I will never forget. I'm playing Puckett's Boathouse.
Which, by the way, it's like a restaurant and a stage.
Yeah.
For people. It's like a very famous Nashville southern food restaurant.
Yeah.
And there's a stage on it as well.
Right. And so what I was doing is, you know, I didn't have an artist deal, but I want to keep performing. So that, the Andy Marshall at Puckett's so always so gracious to me, giving me a gig. And I'm playing for tips. And what I would do is play an hour and then host an open mic night just for the community. I wanted to meet new writers and stuff and kind of do what people did for me in my first couple of years here. So one night, this guy comes, and his name is Nick Kanger. And sweet, sweet guy comes up, wants to play at the open mic night. And he just thinks, you know, he's heard my songs on Rodney, my stuff on Colt. He thinks I'm like Elvis, you know, and he's just treating me like it too. And he mentions at one point in the night that he worked at the tire center at Costco, and I was looking for a job at night so I could continue writing during the day. And so it was just a humbling moment to kind of be like, hey, while you're getting my autograph, do you know any, you know, is there any openings at Costco? You know, are they looking for people that stock stuff overnight and stuff? And he hooked me up, and that's how I got a job at Costco. But it was just, I mean, I don't know if embarrassing is the word, but, you know, it was an interesting moment that he saw me as kind of like an influence on him musically. And he was so happy, you know, to meet me. And I was like, hey, kind of need a job. You know, I need some help. Can you hook me up? And so that was a low point for me, kind of having to ask for help from that guy.
Do you feel like you learned from it and appreciated it even more afterward?
Just through that experience
just
with Costco?
Through that experience.
Everything that is connecting with people now is pretty much about that experience in my life. So, yes, it's been truly beneficial. I got a great perspective, you know, on what matters, you know,
what matters
in life. That's kind of what Leela Stars is about. You know, I did a lot of, I don't know what you say, like not soul searching, but you know, interesting song.
The sky ain't falling, it's just the roof of my car.
About your daughter?
Yeah, that song is about the thumbtacks that she gave me to hold up the roof of my Honda that I had at the time. And when my roof was coming down, I lost it. Because at that point in my life, I was drinking a ton just to kind of cut the edge off the heaviness and the burdens and stuff that I was kind of up against with wanting to still chase my dream, kind of thinking I was nuts. Pretty much everybody looking at us from the outside probably thought I was nuts too. You know, I had all the kids and I was still trying to do that to take care of them when I could have, you know, done a lot of other things and made a whole lot of sense, you know, to take care of them. But yeah, Leela Stars is about those thumbtacks that she let me borrow, and I was really bummed and frustrated at the time. The roof coming down on my car was one of those moments in your life where you're looking up and you're like, you got to be kidding me, you know, like I need one freaking more thing you know to carry right now. And one morning when I was about to clock in at Costco, I looked up and I saw those thumbtacks, and it just reminded me. Well, first I thought of her face and just her smile and how much fun she had putting those up. And she just thought they were awesome. You know, they made the car look incredible. And it was just an interesting perspective at that time to remember, hey, I got healthy kids. I do have a job. I have two. You know what I mean? And I'm still able to write. My wife never was unhappy. You know, I was really the only one that was unhappy. And so that was a great moment. And got a cool song out of it.
So you were drinking a lot. You don't drink at all now.
No, I'm sober.
So you must have been drinking a lot to have to go, I have to stop.
Man, we want to talk about numbers. I mean, I was drunk at Costco. You know, obviously I was doing my work, working hard, but I mean, I was drinking on breaks at Costco. You know, I go to the parking lot, you know, and do that, leave, go do a show at the Bluebird. You know, they were hiring me for shows. I was still able to get some work out of them. I drink before them, drink after them, drink while I wrote, drive home, drink more.
Were you drinking because you're sad?
Man, yeah, I think I was just didn't want to face not making it, you know, not being able to take care of everybody. You know, it's almost like when you're drunk, those things aren't as heavy, you know, they don't matter, I guess. And, drinking a little bit out of just insecurity and fear, you know, I guess, you know, just scared.
What was the point where you were like, okay, I gotta chill?
Dude, me quitting is the weirdest story. I don't, you know, hopefully at some point it'll make sense where I could kind of help other people and explain it. But honestly, I mean, I think my body just said to my brain, you have to quit, you know, with working and drinking that much. I woke up on a Saturday. I remember that. It was an October football game day. Me and football not drinking just didn't ever happen. That hadn't happened since I was probably like 15. I don't know, something crazy like that. And I just didn't drink one Saturday. And I don't even know why. I didn't like wake up and say, man, I gotta stop. I just woke up, didn't drink that day. Didn't drink on Sunday. A couple days turned into a week, you know. And then it became this like challenge where it was like, I've gone this far. I want to go backwards, you know. And I also kind of had a little sobriety high. You know, when you quit drinking, you've been drinking that much, your body feels really, really good once it gets over, you know, not craving just a drink with all your might. But so, yeah, now I'm like, that was 2 Octobers ago, so I'm a year and almost a half.
The funny thing is, I don't drink either. Walker doesn't drink. And when we go on tour, there's beer everywhere. Like, the rider's, like, full of beer, and Walker and I are like, Walker, he just sits there.
Yeah.
He's like, Walker, yeah. I know you don't drink, but if you know anybody that wants beer, they can have it. So Nikita will end up drinking some of it. She'll have one. Her little Nikita. So, okay, tell me about this song here.
All right.
This one, let's play. Let's see. Man, I got all of them. It's like asking me which kid I like the best here. talk about this one. Beer in the fridge.
And I quit drinking. The reason I want to get drunk.
Because I played this on the radio. I was I was moved by the song.
Yeah, no.
I still look out for the cops when I'm driving around town. And I'm still not quite sure what to do with my hands in a crowd. There's a lot I can't remember and a lot I can't forget. One silver bullet in a chamber and I'm playing Russian roulette with that beer in the fridge. Last of 12. Sole survivor of my last all-nighter in the back of the bottom shelf.
How real is that song?
It's gonna be
so real, man. It just touches on a lot of, you know, fears, insecurities that I deal with. And like, you know, you were asking, you know, why were you drinking that much? You know, my wife has never threatened to leave me, but she probably should have several times, you know, in that time period, you know, when I was drinking that much. And, there's so many lines in that song. One lyric in that song that I feel like describes me and something that I deal with is the first one about running to your mom at church.
Running to your mom at church.
She said, I've been praying for you. Yes, now. Well, like, I just care what people think, you know, and I am my own worst critic as well. And drinking made me care less, you know. That was one positive about drinking. You know, obviously, no, you don't need to drink to do that. But, you know, I feel pressure, you know, to be a certain, just, I don't know, to succeed, you know. And
from yourself.
From myself. But you know, like I said, when I told Lainey's parents we were coming here, I feel the eyes, you know, I feel people saying, oh, you're crazy, you're not going to make it, you're not good enough, you know, you're not this, and I don't want to believe them, but I kind of do, and when I'm drinking, I definitely don't, I don't care what they think, but that song is so true. You know, the line about the hands, I mean, dude, the first show that I played without a beer, I just felt completely naked. I mean, I've never felt stupider in my life because, you know, so many years of strumming that last chord and reaching for that beer. I was to a point where just holding a beer before I even opened the thing, it made me feel a sense of security. You know, that's kind of where I was with drinking. But yeah, it's true. I mean, but again, I will say, I mean, Lainey, it's not true. Lainey, I didn't lose, you know, my wife, but, you know, she shed many tears. You know, talking to me about it. And I was at a point where I admitted, you know, she would say things like, she didn't say things anymore like, do you have a problem? I would admit, I wasn't in denial at the point when I quit. I said, I do have a problem and I'm not going to go without it. You know, I need this right now for me, you know.
I want to move over to the comedian.
Yeah.
Your dark songs, like, resonate with me.
Yeah.
Like hardcore.
Yeah.
Like beer in the fridge. You know, I come from a family of addicts and alcoholics. Yeah. And I was like, dang, man, I feel the honesty in these songs. With the comedian, which I'm going to play right here.
It's too bad. Being funny and being happy ain't the same thing. It ain't the same thing. It's so sad. Some of the loneliest hearts in the crowd are the most entertained. Such a strange thing. Here's to the ones who make us laugh to keep themselves from crying. Here's to the ones who make us laugh to keep themselves from crying.
Like, I heard this song and it still gives me chills to hear. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you, it's like it can, and I have issues,
yeah,
like that, like where it's, you know, I want to make people laugh so they can't see how sad. And it's a process that I've been dealing with for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's the front. You try to make people laugh.
Right.
That's where you find love.
Yeah.
That's where I always was able to find love. Like, let me be the guy that makes people laugh, because that's, I'll find the love from that.
Right.
I have trouble accepting love. I have trouble giving love just from the environment. You know, you and I talk about, is it nature or nurture? Like, we have that conversation, right, like, away from stuff. And you know, for me, I think it was definitely nurture.
Right.
The love thing. And I heard that song. I was like, dear God, is he writing songs from my brain? Like, every song you would sing, I'd be like, God. So the comedian, is that about a friend of yours specifically?
Yeah.
So you went to high school with him?
Yeah, it's about a friend I grew up with. And he did not commit suicide, but he died at an early age. And he was that guy, you know, just hilarious, but did have issues, you know, and as we all do. You know, I think so many people can relate with that song. You know, it's that we all try to find that affirmation that's never really enough, but it sure helps, you know. It doesn't sustain any long-term healing or fix us. You know, it's like drinking a beer. It does make me feel good immediately, you know, and as does me performing on stage and getting that laugh. It makes me feel like I just jumped out of a plane, you know. But when you get back in your green room and you're all by yourself, all the real stuff comes back, you know, and you got to do it again. But, yeah, that song... I'm so glad a guy named Matt Jenkins and Josh Jenkins, they wrote it with me, and they were insistent that we do that song together, and I'm glad you appreciate it. I'm glad people
and we'll get to the more upbeat stuff, because I think you have a sound that is not like anyone else, but I just, you know, it's my podcast. I talk about whatever I want. So those are the songs that like hit me hard.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, he's like, songs a lot of times don't speak in real human words anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you do feel something authentic, regardless of sonically what it sounds like, it being authentic still cuts through. And no matter what's behind it,
yeah,
something for real still cuts through, regardless of the format, the instruments, like realness cuts through. And so that's what I felt from like Stars and The Comedian and Beer in the Fridge. And
yeah.
But then, you know, you got stuff like Break the Internet. You make all the stuff in your shack?
Yeah. Beat on tables, beat on the wall, slam the door.
All these sounds. Yeah. It's you and that microphone, and you're beating cups and sounds.
That's it. That's it. I got a keyboard every once in a while. Break the
internet. You're doing all these BGBs.
Yeah. I'm a BGB maniac. But I got more gold than
a record label. As you're cutting this and you're playing it for people, what are they saying to you? Like, man, this ain't gonna work, or is it gonna be great, or what are they saying?
Well, you know, the people at my publishing company, they signed me obviously, to write songs, but wanted me to. They signed me with the intention of me being an artist, and you know, I think at first, they thought, hey, he's going to write that one, you know, that dangerous one on the country radio, you know, that country radio slap, slam, first release, ba-boom. And what happened was I kind of got all therapeutic, you know, on them. Like you talk about Comedian and stuff like that. Those feel so good for me to write. You know, sometimes it's just great to get that stuff off of your chest and tell everybody. That makes me feel better. And so that's what I was doing with those dark ones. And then the happy ones, that's just kind of how I want to party. You know, that's the stuff I want to play live. And they definitely were. What happened was I started turning them in, and my team didn't see really a fast track, hey, this is going to country radio, you know, obviously from the sound, but they just loved them. You know, they loved the song. They found themselves listening to them. And I know it's cheesy, but I even found myself, I would listen to them like they're not me. I'd be like, man, I just like this song, The Comedian, you know. This one too, yeah.
Of all this project, what was the first song you wrote?
So the first song on this project that was written was either Say Sober or You Broke Up With Me. I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg. But yeah, those two, You Broke Up With Me was the one where we all went, hey, keep doing that.
Yeah.
Because that's something about that that's unique and digestible.
And this is a single now. You Broke Up With Me.
The single. I know it's difficult to see me on a road. But hey, you broke up with me.
Yeah, what can I say, babe? You broke up with me. What's funny is I remember texting you, because I remember the song came out. And
yeah.
You produced it yourself. And I tell you, I was like, hey, I heard the new version. It's produced slightly different parts.
Yeah.
Like more radio palatable. And your response was, I'm listening to it like I never heard it before.
Yeah, I am. Darling, you can't crash my party with your sorry and what always. Don't be raining on my Mardi Gras parade for a minute. Simmer on down a notch. Ain't nobody making you watch me get my phone, get you on. No, girl, can't touch my good as gold. So that's a single now, and you're working.
Yeah. You know, and the interesting thing is that, and I'll just talk about my listeners for a second.
Yeah.
Because I can always tell by my listeners if it's exposed the right way, what will work. Because all I got to do is play something.
Right.
My listeners are no BS. If they don't like it, they just don't. They don't do what I say.
Right.
I just try to give them good options that they probably wouldn't be able to hear other places.
I dig it.
Like, honest to God, I can't make them do anything.
Right.
But what I try to do in my job is go, this is different, or this is really good, and you're not going to hear this anywhere else. And if you like it, then consume it, however.
Right.
And I played that song, and I looked at it on iTunes before I played it, because I like to see what happens.
Uh-huh.
And I gave it one full spin. It was at 183. I played it one time, within an hour and a half, went to 38 or something.
Boom.
And I was, for me, it wasn't like, man, Bobby, I told you knew what was good.
Yeah.
It was, God, if people can get out of that box a little bit.
Right.
And see, this is one spin.
Right.
People reacted to this song.
Right.
And so, I've tinkered with it a bit more, but now it's kind of like, let's let the label see what they can do.
Yeah.
But it's got to be cool to see people hear it and go, wow, I heard it. Now I like it. Let me buy that.
Yeah.
It's got to be some kind of bit like, okay, maybe there's something to this. Do you feel that?
Oh, man. Yes. And, the first question you asked me was, what's it mean for you to be on a label? And I just didn't. It's all – every day is a good day.
No, familiar saying.
I'm not kidding though. I mean, that day we celebrated. I celebrate everything right now, and that is amazing. That I woke up that day, and you play my song one time, and it does that. And yes, man. I mean, you work so hard on music, and you just think it's so good, and you just then you produce it, and it's so awesome, and then you put it out there, and you're like, oh man, what?
Now it's time
Did
to see.
I like it, yeah. You know,
the critics are paying and using. They're criticizing with their money.
Oh yeah.
And when they pay it, they're not criticizing.
Yeah.
And when they don't pay it, they're criticizing.
Right. And so now to see, I mean, we had a sick first week. I mean, we blew it up. And it was awesome. And yeah, I mean, it is so gratifying, that people liked it, like they're liking it.
Let me tell you another song, too, that I saw a track, and I was like, how can this song even be a song? Just by looking at the name of it.
Oh.
I was like.
One of mine?
Yeah. I was like, he wrote a song about Halloween.
Oh.
And I remember, because I think it was on the set. What, Halloween was on the second A-track?
Yeah, it was on Break the Internet.
So. Halloween. I was like, well, let me even see what this song's about. Halloween. Like, what's this about? One of the deepest songs.
Yeah.
In a beautiful way.
Thanks, man.
Because that's like, I get to take off my costume around you. You're talking about your wife.
Yeah.
And
then I knock, knock, knocked on your door. Every mask I ever wore shattered like glass on the floor. And it was like
Halloween ended to all the people I pretended to. Rest in peace.
So deep, so good, man.
There we go, baby.
To all the people I pretended to be. Rest in peace.
What's it like playing that for your wife?
Oh, man. Awesome. Because she's so numb, you know, love songs. In 12 years, 3-4 pub deals, you write a ton of love songs. And you just, you come home and you're like, did I get you? Did it? Did this one get you? And none of them, you know, got her like this one. Because we dated in high school, and she knew that's what she meant to me immediately, you know, right off the bat. I was a real insecure kid trying to fit in Mobile. But then I met her, and she just saw the side of me that she really fell in love with. And that's, yeah, one of her favorite songs for sure.
Can we talk about this Sleep number for a second? Did you look at my room when we walked by?
Dude, I didn't. I wanted to, but good. I didn't want to be that creep.
I'm glad you didn't. I got a Sleep number bed in less than time of year. Maybe tempted once again to go to the same old mattress store in search of the same old bed just because it's on sale. But let me tell you right now, Sleep number has the bed that adjusts to whatever it is, your back, your neck. You can go into the store, you look at the screen, and it tells you like what your number is. My number is a 30. The Sleep number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort on each side. It's the perfect bed for couples. You can have each side, you can have a different number. Optional Sleep IQ technology, too. It tracks your sleep. It gives you personal insights. You see how life affects your sleep. You see how sleep affects your life. The Sleep number was ranked highest customer satisfaction in mattresses by J.D. Power for 2 years in a row. My setting is a 30. I think my IQ score was in the 90s last night. Never been a better time to visit a Sleep number store. You can save 50% on a limited edition bed during the Sleep number event that they're having. That's a Queen C2 mattress, $599.99. You'll only find Sleep number at any of the 500 Sleep number stores nationwide. And you can find one nearest you by calling 800-NEXT-BED and say you heard it here on the Bobby Bone Show, Bobbycast. And so that's there. And yeah, that's good. I like having sponsors because that's how you know people are listening to the. We started this thing and we didn't think anybody was going to listen.
Like yeah.
Mike D and I, this is our equipment. Like, this is just stuff that we wrangled up.
Yeah.
And we started doing this little podcast and we were talking to people like, for example, Caitlin Smith, one of the first ones who's on your list. It's just you and Caitlin right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, Caitlin, come over to the house because I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to talk to artists, talk to songwriters. And then now we got the Sleep number sponsoring this
there
thing.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It's like, oh, let me ask you this. You put all your stuff out for free at first.
Right.
Well, who thought of that? Why was that the plan?
So that was thought of by my manager, Robert Carlton. And he's kind of famous now. But he, you know, he heard my stuff. And like we were talking earlier, he heard those songs that I was building in the shack. And he said, you know, these ain't going to fit country radio right now, but these will build a fan base. People will share these. They will love them. They will connect to them. And so that's what we did. We just started putting them out, started touring a little bit, got a couple opening slots, you know, last year and places to go play them, got the loop. Started learning how to do that because just wanted them to sound as close as I could to these tracks. And that's why we started putting out free music. And it was so exhilarating. It was so therapeutic for me. It obviously made me a better writer. I feel like they just keep getting better and better. I'm already working on number 3. I don't know where that lives, you know, as far as label stuff goes. But they will let me continue the 8 tracks. And so I'm excited about those. They'll just keep coming.
For me, I'm a huge fan of you and the music that you make. And I became a huge fan way early. Like, I was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I would say on the radio, they'd be like, what's the biggest albums of the year? And I'd be like, you know, I played Ripcord from Urban a lot, Marin, and Walker Hayes.
Yeah, you did.
And I would say, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah,
and
man.
And it wasn't like you and I were talking every day. I don't even know if we were talking. We were exchanged a text occasionally.
Yeah.
But I was just a fan. Like, I was just a fan. Because I love people who try things that aren't the same.
Yeah.
Even if they fall on their face. Like, I love people that take shots. Falling forward is still moving forward.
Yeah.
And so, one, I like the music. And two, I enjoy the fact that you were trying something new.
Yeah.
And so, I would say that stuff. Like, magazines would do interviews. Like, what you listen to most? I love Dirk's album. I love the Walker Hayes album. Like, that's just what I... Because it was the truth. Like, what's the most thing that you play? I would tell him. And so... Something that shook me a bit, and I'm jaded, and I'll be the first to admit it because I've been doing this now, in this capacity for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I've had Garth Brooks sit beside me, right, and play.
There you go.
And I've had, you name it. And it's great, and it never loses the fact that it's great.
Uh-huh.
But when you eat filet mignon every day,
Yeah.
It becomes kind of normal. Yeah,
Salisbury steak.
So it's like, I enjoy it and I still appreciate it. But rarely do things shake me. Occasionally things like that. Really shake. And I'm going to tell you, I get a message from one of my friends. She works at my record label. Her name is Megan Boardman.
Uh-huh.
And she says, did you hear this song called Pain Walker Hayes sent out in the email? I was like, no. I'm not on his email list. Yeah. I'm not on anybody's email list. I didn't know he had an email list. Like, I just listened to the music. And I was like, no. She goes, you should probably hear it. And I was like, well, send me the email. And so, like, I'm going to tell you, eyeball to eyeball, I just sat in my car. And I was like, to have someone you're such a huge fan of, like, even mention you in a song.
Oh, dude.
I was like, this is, like, crazy in my life.
Honestly, it means the world for you to say that, because when you put somebody in a song, you're like, are they going to hate? Like, is this going to suck for them? Or are they
it was the weirdest thing. It was a great... I have trouble with emotion, feeling it. I have trouble letting myself feel emotion because I feel like any good emotion is going to be gone.
Yeah.
And any good emotion has to be met with equal bad. So I try not to have good emotion. Listen, I'm nuts, right?
Okay.
I had great emotion from this song.
Good. That's neat, man. That's awesome.
And so, and you can't, this is online, but this is Pain from Walker Hayes. Here you go.
May 23rd, 2016, 7 something in the morning. I was driving when a dream come true. Came through my Honda factory speakers and on me. Bobby Bones played a song that I wrote about a lonely beer in the fridge. It's one of my dark ones. What you hear is how it felt from the broken in my heart. One's about addiction, love, loss and recovery, trust me. Only wrote it cause I had to get it out of me. Not for Nashville, not for radio, for nobody but me. And maybe that trouble soul pressing rewind. Wrestling demons like mine, looking for company in this design. It doesn't really feel so grand all the time.
Pain, I didn't know pain.
Nah,
could feel so good.
It doesn't feel so grand all the time.
Like, I get chill bumps now listening to that song. Dude. I guess I want to know about, because I never asked you about the song because I was kind of embarrassed to do it. Because I was like, dude, you said my name.
You were embarrassed.
Yeah, a little bit. I was embarrassed.
Bobby?
So, did you know I was going to play your song that morning?
No.
Because I don't tell anybody I'm going to play their music.
Well, you know, when we've talked about this, I just feel weird, you know, asking, you know, people to do that. You know, I honestly, you know, that song is in that category of comedian, Leela Starr. You know, nobody asked me to write about that. I just had to, you know, it was a special moment for me. I was out in the middle of nowhere, picking up. Actually, I had my loop worked on in close to Murfreesboro. So I was just driving when you played Beer in the Fridge, and man, it just was another one of those moments where you got to pinch yourself. And I was like, I can't believe what is happening to me at this point in my life. You know, I got 6 kids I could barely feed, you know, a year ago. And now my work tape's rocking on the radio, you know, and Beer in the Fridge is a naked song. I mean, it's the truth. There's like 3 things on the track. You know, so I'm hearing Keith Urban blow it up, and then all of a sudden I hear just, you know, all these, and it just rocked me, man. I mean, I don't have a lot of those moments where I like pull over and cry. I mean, I freaking love music, and it has so much emotional power over me, but I have never felt like I did when I listened to that song. And so I had to write about that moment and everything that it made me think of, you know, how far my life had changed pretty quick, you know. And so I just blurted it all out in that song, and you were obviously a part of that story. So thanks.
And it was a good business
props
move.
To you for it was a great business move. But honestly, like you said, I mean, I got to tell you, there were moments where I was like, I don't know if I want to release it, like, I was also like, do I just put like a DJ? I didn't know whether you would appreciate having your name in it, or I was like, he's going to think this is just a business move. But honestly, I ran it by my team as I was creating the song, and they were like, Man, you mentioned Mike, that guy you worked with at Costco. You mentioned your wife and your kid, and you know, the song is honest about every detail. There's not one. We've always laughed because I'm like, somebody's gonna ask about that song, and be like, can you tell me about it? And I'm just gonna be like, well, May 23rd, 2016. You know, just I'm gonna recite this song because there's really nothing else to say. It's just the 100% truth, down to the Costco card in the freaking console.
I believe you too, because one, you didn't put it out like out.
Yeah,
it was. You sent out an email.
Yeah,
it's still up there. You can't even like stream it.
Yeah,
you got to get.
No, it's nowhere.
And I hope you, eventually, if you put it up, it's all good. And I don't believe anybody at any time for any reason. But I believe you, because I just, okay. I don't believe you. I don't believe anybody.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you know how it is around here.
Yeah, no, I know exactly.
When times are good, everybody's your friend.
Yeah,
and when times aren't good, and nobody wants anything to do with you.
I do know that, man. And that's the nature of this beast.
And so you got to find the people. And this isn't just our business. This is like a life thing. You have to find the people that when times are on that stock market downtick, that are right by your side, and you keep them by your side when that stock market goes back up.
Yeah.
Because it's going to go back down again.
Right.
And so those are the people just ride. They just ride. Let them ride with you, and you ride with them.
Yeah.
And that's how you find the people.
Yeah.
Like the people that are with you when it's down are the people that you just keep on surrounding yourself with.
Right. And they're rare.
And there's like a few, and that's it.
I know.
We had this whole conversation like off mic days ago, but
yeah.
It's weird. It's been cool getting to know you, because again, I'm just a huge fan.
Well, thanks.
And that's why I went, and I was like, because I was doing this whole stand-up comedy tour, and I can ask whoever I want to open. And I was like, man, I would love to have freaking Walker Hayes come out.
Yeah.
Like, because I just want to watch him play. Like, no other reason. Like, I just want Walker to come out. And then in the middle of all this, to see, like, you popping.
Yeah.
Like, just popping. Is it now where you're starting to be cool and people are now coming out going, hey, cool guy, you want to work together?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I bet.
That happens.
And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
Because you're going to trust them as far as you can throw them, but you can still use each other for for whatever advantage you're working together.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm ashamed to say this, but I'm sure I've done that to somebody in this town, you know, and I try to remember that we're all capable of that. And but, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are definitely coming out of the woodwork. And that's tough, you know, sometimes it's tough to accept that.
You need the people coming out of the woodwork, though, is the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You need them. It's just use them for what they're there to be used for.
Yeah.
They're not the people that are completely down.
Yeah.
But they're down for what you need them for, and you're down for what you need them for.
Right.
Just remember, I didn't come out of the woodwork. I was way early. No. I was like hiding in the woods. I was waiting. I didn't come out. Like, I was up in a tree looking down. I was like, I see you, Walker. Oh, man. It's been good. I hope you enjoyed, like, hanging and talking.
No, I did, man. Thanks for having me. I feel like I've been on a couch.
Dude, it is. Like, it's therapeutic.
It is.
Here's a little something. This is called Walker Singing to the Duggars. Would you like to talk to us?
Oh, my gosh. Singing to the Duggars?
Yeah.
You talking about from the show?
You tell me what this is.
Hey, guys. Hey, how's it going? You guys like music?
No way.
You got a second?
You have the episode?
Yeah. So go ahead and tell me before I play. Dude. So what exactly is it?
Okay. So this is when Derek and Jill, I think is their name, got engaged. And
how did you end up on this show?
Okay. So the producer of the show lives near me and called me one day.
He heard you on the porch.
He heard me on the back porch. No, he actually, man, he was just like, we're thinking about doing this segment. If you can give us a song, I can convince the network that they need to do this. And I said, man, tell me about their love story. He was like, it's really cool. They went all the way to Kathmandu, but they lived, you know, super close, but went all the way to another country and met each other. So I just wrote this song. And he was like, boom, that's perfect for their engagement.
Here we go.
Hey, guys. Hey, how's it going? You guys like music?
I do.
You got a second? I got a song that y'all reminded me of.
Do you like music?
Hey, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, you grew up about 30 short minutes down the street. But we had to go 8,000 miles away. to meet. I'm not sure what the Lord was thinking, taking us all the way to Kathmandu. But I know he was thinking of me when he made you.
So, oh, yeah. And as beautiful as that is, the acting is just horrendous. First of all, has anyone ever in the history of questions answered the word no to you? Do you like music?
Yeah.
Hey, do you like music?
It's a safe question.
Nah, not really. Right. All right, man. Well, I'm going to move on. Hey, do you like food?
No.
And they just listen to the acting here. Yeah, what's up?
Hey, guys.
Even the hey guys, hey guys. It's pretty bad.
You're just like sitting in a park bench.
Hey guys,
yeah, hey Randy. Guys. Hey, how's it going?
God, this is awful. The acting.
Nobody wrote a script. I remember meeting with him and I talked to him because he knew he was in on it. It's just
I would hope.
Beyonce. Yeah, and man, we botched it big time. But
hey,
she was still.
Hey, how's it going? You guys like music? I do.
Yeah. She's like, yeah. I do. Yeah, I do. Music, like, how lucky, because of all the people in the world, they both liked music. Like,
I know.
You're lucky that they both did.
I know. Man, it was a dude, I'm no actor. Come on.
Hey man. I'm sitting here
you
on the
like
bench.
Music?
Happy to have a guitar.
I happen to have written a song about your whole life.
Exactly.
Do you have a second to stop for me while I play this whole song I wrote about your life? This is totally random, by the way. Do you like music?
I'm a bad actor.
Oh, man.
I've actually auditioned for some stuff and failed big time. I mean, acting is, talk about putting your guard down. I mean, that's a scary thing. Kind of like your comedy thing we were talking about before we went out. I was asking you if you're afraid.
It's
you
all
got
vulnerable.
Nothing.
It's all vulnerable. Music's vulnerable. Comedy's vulnerable. Acting. It's all. If you're creative,
yeah.
You are vulnerable.
Oh, yeah.
Because people are choosing if they like or don't like what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you need them to do that. That's vulnerable.
Yeah.
You need someone to like or not like you.
Yeah.
Hopefully they like you. But you don't create so people don't care.
Right.
You create so hopefully people care. And then when they don't, you realize I didn't create good enough. Or at the time, I didn't create good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So just as you get up and you sing songs about your life that are very vulnerable, I get up and I tell stories and the entire light, the entire room is focused on my mouth hole, and that's it. But I mean, really, that's it. But
yeah.
I thrive off of that the same way that you do in writing music.
Right.
I thrive off of just, and again, it comes back to just being, like, needing that love, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's finding love for me. I go out, I need that love, so I fight for it.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at relationships. God. I'm terrible.
You want to talk about it?
No. I don't think so.
It's not the moment.
Not right now. This is not a Bobby cast. This is a Walker Bobby cast.
All right.
So download You Broke Up With Me. That's the only song that you can download
yeah,
right now.
We need people to pay for that.
Yeah, we need you. Whoa, girl, simmer on down a notch. Ain't nobody making you watch. Me get my phone. So Walker, depending on when you hear this, will be out on the road with me until May. WalkerHayes.com is your website too.
Right.
Whenever what's fun is on tour, Nikita Carman comes out and sings Halloween with you.
Oh, she kills it.
Isn't like she's so good, right?
Amazing.
And like nobody even knows about her really yet.
That's weird to me.
She's so good.
I know.
But they're going to.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm going to pull her in
they
here
will.
Once. And, you know, I just met her on Skype and was like, you got to move to the States.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know your story. Like, I didn't know how
oh, you yeah. met. Yeah, a friend. We were just looking for someone. Like, I needed a girl in the band so I could, like, write funny stuff from a girl perspective.
Yeah.
I grew up raised by all women. And so I went through, and I just couldn't find anybody, so I gave up. And a friend was like, hey, you should, there's this girl in Australia. She's not trying to get to the States or be a singer-songwriter over here, but she plays in pubs. And I was like, okay. So I Skyped with her. And I think it was like 10 a.m. I was like, hey, can you get your guitar in the office? And she went and got her guitar. Skyped with her like an hour later. And she played on Skype. That's the only time I'd ever seen her.
No way.
And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're so good.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I don't know about that. And I was like, can you get on a plane?
She spoke.
And can you get here in 3 days? And she got on a plane, quit her job, moved here.
Wow.
Didn't have anywhere to live. She lived with me for like 2.5 months or so. And I was just like, you just write, right? Yeah. She's just writing. She got a publishing deal. She's on a, but she's so good.
Oh, she's phenomenal. Yeah, that song first.
And people will find her. Trust me. I wonder if I.
You got first?
I have everything.
Let me tell you that I'm not so pretty.
I mean, while we're talking about it,
you don't do it with me. She's sick, dude.
She, she's like 2 feet tall. Here we go. Nikita Carmen. This is a first. I'll play some of this.
Cry when you said I'm not the one, 'cause I ain't one to come undone. I held my head up high and bit my tongue. I let the goodbye settle like dust. Couldn't stop thinking about the two of us, and a heart breaks hard to rise above. Take the high road and I'll keep my cool. Pretty soon I won't be thinking about you. First, let me tell my friend she's not that pretty. You don't look half as happy as you do with me. She's wearing that trendy Tom Petty t-shirt. I'll stop being petty about your American girl. But first, let me waste my week's wage on tequila. Curse your name and lipstick on the bathroom mirror. One day I'm gonna wake up, gonna feel just fine. I just gotta go a little out of my mind first.
It's Nikita Carmen.
Dude, I gotta say, like, I know you talk about she like calls that an EP, she's just like, I just released that.
Those are all work tapes.
I'm gonna tell you something. I believe if you were to do that whole play it thing, that Joker would jump up the charts.
It would jump.
I mean, that song reminds me of like something Lord, the royal person, country.
The royal
version.
Person.
You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. She's legitimately like fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm looking over here. It's like other artists you may know. If it's her, ready for the list?
Yeah,
Walker Hayes.
Boom. Yes.
Lindsay L.
Sweet.
My girlfriend / her roommate now, Brandon Ray, who is like one of the greatest. And like that's another dude who can sing his brains off. The Raging Idiots. Caitlin Smith, Natalie Hemby. That's her.
Awesome.
People you may know.
It's good company.
Yeah. Walker, good luck, man.
Dude, thank you. I need it. I'm enjoying this. Appreciate you having me, man. This is awesome.
Relax in the chair.
It is. I don't want to get up.
He walked in the house. He was like, so this is where you live.
Hey, you know what, though? Seriously, you need to let somebody do a Bobby Cass on you.
I do that every morning. It's called the Bobby Bone Show.
Nah, but you need somebody to ask you.
I wrote a book.
You need somebody to ask questions about personal stuff. Like
Amy kind of did a bit, right? Yeah. Amy, well, yeah, we're doing with Amy. She did a bit. But I wrote a book, dude. I'm good.
I got all. You're working on.
A second one. I talked about that. Maybe. Yeah. But yeah, it's good. Life's good for me. This ain't about me. This is about Walker. I'm a huge fan. Like, diehard fan.
Man.
Like, as legitimately as possible. And I kept you from this for a while because it was like, everybody was like, all right, enough of Walker Hayes. Talking about Walker Hayes. It's like, you just wait. I have a tweet that I say from like 7 months ago that was like, in a year, everybody's going to be like, why did I sleep on Walker Hayes? I save that tweet.
Yeah.
I'm going to show everybody one day.
Show them, man.
And be like,
we'll
see?
Show them.
I told you. Good to see you, man.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, Walker Hayes, download. Anything he puts out, I demand it. All right, good. All right, Mike, we're out. What episode was this? 36?
36.
All right, Walker Hayes, at Walker Hayes, right?
.com.
HAYES.
And Walker, follow me on Instagram.
Yeah, at Walker Hayes on Instagram and Twitter, WalkerHayes.com. He's out with me doing all the music, and I do the jokes until May. Have you announced your other thing yet or no?
Nah.
Okay, so never mind. Other stuff coming down. Yeah, other stuff coming for us. All right, we'll see you soon. Bye, everybody. You can hear Nikita still singing in the background. I forgot to turn her part down. Anyway, bye.